This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Comixology. Are you tired of being stuck inside the house with nothing to read? Check out infamouspodcast.com/Comixology for your free 30-day trial to Comixology Unlimited. That's infamouspodcast.com/Comixology. Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 234, and I got that one right this week. And we're calling this one Extraction of the Past Pawns. So you can pretty much guess what we're talking about. I'm Brian, and with me as always is...
Daryl.
And yeah, so hey Daryl, before we get started, just want to remind everyone to go to infamouspodcast.com/Patreon. Check out our tiers, give us a backing. We'll thank our Infamite backer this week, Julian Brown. Thank you, Julian, for your support and love of the show and everything that you do for us. And yeah, with that out of the way, we're talking Extraction, the latest Netflix original movie.
Yes, not the Gina Carano Extraction.
I have to say, these movies are starting to get better. And then we're talking Westworld Season 3, Episode 7, the penultimate episode of Season 3, Past Pawns. Little known fact, penultimate is one of my favorite words.
I actually like using that word too.
It's just really fun to say.
I don't know why.
I used it the other day. So we're, you know this, we're rewatching Buffy, and the kid is watching it for the first time. And it was season four, and when they killed Adam, and I was like, you know, this is the first series that really kind of did their actual finale, like the climax of their season, in the penultimate episode. Like, that's kind of the way it's done now. And Buffy season four was really the first season to do that. And I used the term penultimate. And she's like, what is that word? And I'm like, get a vocabulary. Go look it up.
Lots of adults don't know that word.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, no, this was an interesting week of television watching and stuff. And I don't know if I told you, I started watching Better Call Saul. Have you watched that one yet?
No, I haven't watched that or Breaking Bad.
Okay, so I was really late to the Breaking Bad game, and I did not like Breaking Bad for the first three times I tried to watch it. And I finally just kind of, you know, I said, all right, I'm going to bite the bullet. Everyone's telling me to watch it. And, you know, then I ended up loving it. And the funny thing is, a lot of the stuff that happens in season one that seems kind of stupid and weird really pays off at the end.
I remember you told me that, yeah, and I've only watched episode one, and I'm pretty sure I've watched it twice already, a couple years apart.
Yeah,
and it's not like it was bad or I didn't like it. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. I wasn't really in the frame of mind to watch it.
Hmm.
Kind of like I just actually started rewatching, or not rewatching, jumped back into Hannah on Amazon Prime because I just saw an advertisement that season two.
Did you watch the movie?
Yeah, the movie was... And
okay, because I haven't watched either.
Yeah, the show is, and it kind of threw me for a loop because I watched the movie a couple years ago, and season one has something that changes. I don't want to give it a thing away that where I was like, oh, okay, that's different. But you know, I wasn't sure if it was like that's the only thing. I don't know if the movie was from a book or if it was just a movie, and then the show is kind of, you know, a new take on the movie.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about it to kind of critique it in that way, but I actually like the show a lot better than the movie.
Very cool.
Your boy's in it.
My
Joel
boy.
Kinnaman.
Ugh. Barf. You know, the only thing I ever kind of liked him in was House of Cards.
RoboCop.
No, God, no. Oh my God, that RoboCop was horrible. It was, I couldn't get past the fact that they gave him a robotic arm with a human hand. Exactly. That's the silence is what you should have there.
Okay, I was kind of confused. I was thinking about Last Jedi for a minute.
No, no. He had the human hand with the robotic arm. So anytime he punched something, he was crushing that hand every time.
Yeah, okay.
Stupid. To quote Randy Orton, stupid, stupid, stupid. Anyway. All right, so you watched this before I did, and right. You said, hey, watch this movie. And I was like, all right, I do what I'm told. I'm a good little soldier. I was going to watch it anyway. I did not realize this is based off of a graphic novel. So technically,
I did not either.
It is a comic book movie. I did not realize it was written and produced by the Russos. And
I knew that.
Yeah. So just kind of getting into this. So real quick, Sam Hargrave is the director of this movie. Sam Hargrave also directed a little indie film called Atomic Blonde, starring Charlize Theron. I loved that movie. I thought that movie was great. And
I love that too. Yeah. And he was her spy lover, right?
Yeah. So, and I definitely see like shades of that. And I think he might have worked on John Wick. I don't recall, but.
Yeah, and I told you he was the stunt coordinator for all the Russo Brothers right. MCU movies, and as well as Chris Evans' stunt double.
Yeah, and he's actually in the movie. He's one of the mercenaries.
He's a sniper dude.
Yeah, G.
G. Yeah.
His name is Gaten.
G.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, he looks like, I think he's Hemsworth's stunt double sometimes too, right?
I'm not sure about that.
I mean, because he looks like Hemsworth, but. Yeah, this was an interesting movie. So the summary, I'm going to read the summary real quick. It's about a mercenary named Tyler Rake, who's a fearless black market mercenary, which that must be a growth industry right now, with nothing left to lose when his skills are solicited to rescue the kidnapped son of an imprisoned international crime lord. All right. I'm in from that sentence right there. Right. And then it says, but the murky underworld of weapons dealers and drug traffickers are already an already deadly mission approaches the impossible, forever altering the lives of Rake and the boy. And then it just says this is an action-packed, edge-of-your-seat thriller directed by Sam Hargrave and blah, 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 produced by the Russos, written by one of the Russos and some other people. I called you when I was like halfway through this movie and it was like 11 o'clock at night.
I'm gonna equate
the first half of this movie to the season series premiere of Battlestar Galactica 33. It is so frenetic and just like panic inducing, like, you know, anxiety inducing, like. The way they're running and fighting and going through everything. Wow. And then there's an 11-minute scene that looks like it's a single take. It's actually not, and we can get to that later. Right. But it looks like it's single take running through the forest, and it is just masterful filmmaking. Like, this is Doug Liman level, Jason Bourne, Bourne Identity, sorry, level of badassery on the movie screen, in my opinion.
I would honestly love to see a documentary on them, on some of the stuff on how they filmed this. Mm-hmm. And again, it might be on YouTube or something, I don't know. Like a nice little 15-minute thing where 15-20 minutes just watching, breaking down how they, you know, how they did everything, how they set these shots up, this shot you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get a little bit more into it, one, I just realized this movie kind of reminded me of Man on Fire with Denzel Washington.
So you're jumping ahead to the notes in there, where, or in some of the reaction, where this was, they call this a white savior film, and like we can definitely get into unpacking that, but it's like essentially a white guy.
I did not know about this.
Someone said that this is essentially the white savior version of Man on Fire.
Oh my God.
So we can talk about that. But back to the top of this movie. I mean, it is when he gets to the point where he goes in to get the kid. I mean, come on. This is action movie making at its finest. And I think I was maybe 10 minutes into the movie when I texted you that I feel like Chris Hemsworth is a highly underrated action star. because in the MCU, he's Thor, and he's so OP that he does not get to show off how badass he is with weapons in close combat. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the scene and the house scene, which is that first scene, the first real major action scene, just knocking dudes down like pinballs, and it's the Bourne legacy or the Bourne trilogy or
Bourne Identity was the first one. Oh yeah, well there's that Jason Bourne one. That
well, it was actually
last.
Five, right?
I don't know. Because there was the one with Jeremy Renner.
Yeah. But to the point, that's a perfect comparison in this sense. That the action reminds me of that the fights it was dirty fighting, and that's one of the things I'd like over the last probably like 10 or 15 years or pretty much since Bourne, more of these action movies have that what I call dirty fighting. It's not the perfect block and the perfect kick or what have you. It's hey, if you got a bottle on the table, you're going to use the bottle. You use the table. Like Jason Bourne did use a damn book.
Oh yeah,
that's the type
like John
of
Wick did
I like.
Against the NBA guy. but yeah, no, you're exactly right, and it's I liken it back to that Randy Coast horror style in the Octagon, the dirty boxing up close. You're getting in there and you're doing your thing, but here's like, so Nolan did this kind of stuff with the Batman franchise, right? With the up close like elbows like Cobb McGraw style. But the difference is he got in there and like everything was just a blur of motion.
Terribly
like,
shot.
Yeah. Oh, horribly terrible. Shot. Horrible fight scenes. These actually like pull back and you get to see what's happening and you can see like, you can almost see like the chess game that he's playing in these fights as he's like, okay, I'm going to take this hit because I know it's going to put me into this position. I'm going to take out this dude and then this dude. And it was it was really, I think, again, I'm going to go back to John Wick. I think now that we're getting these stunt coordinators moving into the main director's chair, action movies have come to another level where it is just so much fun to watch because they're putting so much of that art into the craft of filmmaking, and we're seeing like a really maturation of what fights should be and a more realistic look. Like, you know, I love Van Damme. Van Damme movies were a blast back in the day. Steven Seagal movies were a blast back in the day. But that wasn't real fighting. If you went out and you tried to fight someone like Jean-Claude Van Damme in a movie or Steven Seagal in a movie, you're getting killed.
Yeah.
Like even if you were a high-level martial artist and you go out and you try and fight someone like that, most likely you're getting beat up.
Yeah. And the thing is, of course, and I've watched stuff when they're talking about fight choreography, even like true to life martial arts where some of these things are used, you have to sell things in a way, just like wrestling. You oversell in a way where, you know, there's the best punch usually is a straight line punch, but you know, for the movie's sake, sometimes you have to, you know, round that punch off. But movies like this and some of the scenes of think of Winter Soldier, the fights in there, or think of the fights in Civil War. Again, Hargraves was the stunt coordinator for these.
Yep.
And he has it's that nonstop, but at the same time, it's not overly, and again, go back to it's not overly shiny in the ways of a Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's that dirty type boxing. It's that rough and tumble, you know, using what you have at your disposal, especially when you tone it down because we don't have superheroes. We don't have Captain America.
Right.
We don't have Thor. We don't have Bucky. So this is even more grounded than those, but still it's just so damn fun to watch.
Man, his Hargraves, just IMDb as a stunt guy is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He was
I think he did some for like the Hunger Games as well.
Yeah,
right?
And he was Tom O'Pinkett's stunt double in the first episode of Dollhouse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Hilo, my second favorite BSG or third favorite BSG character.
Yeah, but as far as on the movie itself, you know, it's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you read the summary. I mean, there's not much more to it. There is a nice emotional kind of connection we get with Tyler.
Yeah,
you know, having to do with his son, and that plays a big part in how he relates to the kid he's rescuing. And what's that kid's name again?
His name was Ovi. Avi.
Ovi.
Was the kid. Ovi, Avi, Avi. Avi. Yeah. Avi. Yeah, right. So I really like the way they handled that, the stuff with Tyler's kid. You didn't just get like, oh, his like, we weren't just getting pieces of the story. It was, everything was kind of off in the distance. It was a blur. Like when he's on that plateau drinking a beer and then jumps off, you know, down into the water where they're all like, I'm going to jump. No, you're going to jump. No, I'm going to jump. And he just gets up and jumps, you know, seeing the kid like kind of slowly come into focus was really cool.
That was really nice.
And it was good story. It was just a good like visual story that was told, because, you know, here he was trying to reconcile. I mean, part of the reason he does what he does, and I'm not saying like going after and rescuing this kid, but being a black market mercenary, which again, man, how do you get a business card that says that? and like, that's your actual job. Is that on LinkedIn? Do I have to go get Indeed? Is it somewhere else? I only ask because I find myself needing to find a job again.
You have to have a particular set of skills.
Yeah, see, I don't have that set of skills. And, like, I don't know, the fact that I don't really like guns, you know, kind of probably would preclude me from existing in that world. And let me say, I don't like guns for me. Anyone else who wants guns, whatever, that's the Second Amendment. You're right.
Yeah, and we can get to some of the gunfights in this movie. Oh, my goodness.
Well, let's talk about the guns for a second, because the guns were not just used as guns. They were bludgeoning weapons. They were parrying weapons. They were, you know, just whatever you needed the gun to be. Like, you know, he got up at the plate and, like, you know, he took that four seam slider deep. You know, it was a baseball bat. It was a hockey stick at times. It was crazy the way they did that. What did you think of the twist?
I actually like that. And how much, I don't know how much we want to get into, you know.
You know, it's on Netflix. People probably aren't going to watch it, so we can spoil it.
Okay. So basically, Avi's father is a drug dealer. He's a piece of crap. He's a drug lord of, because this takes place in India.
Yep.
And he's a drug lord. And his, I guess you would call, not handler, but his babysitter, for lack of a better term, is the drug lord's second in command. And what is that guy's name?
Saju.
So, obviously, Avi. So, Avi gets kidnapped by a rival drug lord from another city. And basically, the Avi's father tells the guy, look, you better get my son back, or you have a son, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much saying, look, if you don't get my son back, your son's not going to see his next birthday. So this guy, so the idea is they hire Tyler to do the dirty work. Mm-hmm. And then because they don't have the money, because like you said, he's a, you know, black market mercenary. Those ain't cheap.
Nope.
So the idea is to let him do the dirty work, you know, take the reward, which is a kid, and then kill him and just go on its way. I actually liked it because the guy had an actual motive,
right,
for doing what he was doing.
It wasn't just the, oh, you're my minion, you have to go do this, that we see so often in some of these,
right,
movies. It was, he was fighting for something of his own to make sure that it didn't happen.
And that's what made him, like, it's, you know, it's all about that, you know, the intention and the conviction of the reasoning why you're doing something. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's good to have the cannon fodder guys, and there were tons of cannon fodder in this movie.
Oh, yeah, lots of red shirts. And they seem to all be police officers.
Corrupt police officers, yeah. Man. That's what, like, that's basically what, because they were corrupt for the other drug lord. But the idea of having an adversary that actually has something he's fighting for,
yeah,
just makes it more interesting to me. Because
I was gonna say, and not just that, but he's like, he's trained, like he's a former special forces, just like Tyler, And so it was, they both were fighting for something. And then you had, you know, Amir as the other crime lord who had kidnapped Avi. How cool was Amir?
Yeah.
Like
how about them just tossing kids off buildings though?
Did you expect that?
No, I did not.
Did you laugh out loud when he threw that first kid? Because I totally laughed. I totally was like,
I may or may not have. I'm not sure.
You're not at liberty to say.
But, yeah, but I thought he was just gonna dangle him off. No, just said, you know what? Have fun. Like, speaking of RoboCop, it's like, can you fly, yeah, Bobby?
But no, just the way, like, Amir the whole time was just like super cool and collected and like, you know, like just like, all right, now we got to do this. We got to kill a bunch of people. Why aren't you doing your job? Now I got to come out of here and do this.
And then when the boy, the 16-year-old, was like, that wanted to work for him.
Yeah, Farhad.
And he gets his ass handed to him by Tyler, which that was one of the funniest scenes, him fighting these kids.
When the kids attacked him, I just thought he was going to walk away, right? I did not expect him to start, like, whipping kids around and hitting them off the side of buildings and vans the way he did. And the one kid's like, you stole my gun. And he's like,
I know it's...
He's like, whatever, man. And... Yeah, but there was no hesitation.
The way we're laughing, people might think this is a comedy, but no, it was just. And then the disdain on his face while he's fighting them, like, these damn kids.
He's like,
are you serious,
mother? yeah, it was just like you said, the disdain. That is the perfect word to use for the look on Hemsworth's face. Hemsworth gets his ass kicked in this movie, repeatedly.
And that's another thing, kind of where I look at it similar to John Wick and actually Atomic Blonde too, where usually these heroes come out unscathed. I like it when the heroes, you know, get their asses handed to them and they have to, you know, run back. Like, I was listening to real quick a review of the first Raid movie, and and he mentions how the main character, sometimes he runs.
Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot, like in the older movies.
Yeah, unless it's a Tom Cruise movie, the hero doesn't run.
Yeah.
You know, there was a study done that the more steps Tom Cruise takes in a movie, the higher the box office is.
That's hilarious.
Like, because like the Mission Impossible movies, obviously the more he runs, the more action is in the movie, the better they've done in the theater. It's very, very interesting. But not only does he run, but he hides, he like steps back, he like takes a moment to collect himself when they find that like abandoned office. I'm gonna jump kind of a little bit ahead here. It's this movie does not have like great reviews, right? Like, we're talking about this movie, it's a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, or it was as the whenever I did this stuff, but it's one of those things where like this movie is not necessarily, you know, gonna move any kind of needle for movies or anything like that. But this is a pretty good movie as far as like action films go. There's a purpose to nearly everything that they do. And yeah, and there's, so I had one friend tell me that like, oh, I heard it's really gory. I didn't feel like this movie was gory at all.
It's very violent, but
it's violent,
gory.
But there's no gore to it. And you know, I mean,
yeah,
I had just watched Dolores get her arm blown off, so you know that was kind of gory, even though she's a robot. And one of the reviews said, spectacular stunt work with an electric performance by Chris Hemsworth can't save Extraction from being dragged down by its aimless violence. Again, I don't feel like this was like, this wasn't the Warriors, where the Warriors are trying to get to Coney Island.
Come just, out and play.
Just having violence along the way, right? As they come out and play, right, as you succinctly point out. There was a reason for a lot of this. And especially when you're looking at the Chris Hemsworth or Tyler trying to get Avi away, and then Terminator Saju, Saji coming up and like just being an unstoppable like killing machine. I didn't feel like any of that was aimless.
No, it was along the lines of that the John Wick type violence, mm-hmm. where yeah, for people that aren't fans of action or are a little squeamish, not for the gore but for the violence, okay, I get that. But yeah, I wouldn't call it gratuitous.
Yeah.
Because like you said, think about it. He is in a foreign city with a corrupt police force trying to run from this drug dealer, his henchmen, mm-hmm. and the police that are on the take, and the colonel,
right. Yeah.
You know, that runs the military.
Mm-hmm.
So everything they did was pretty much they had to do it.
Right. I will say there was a misstep in this movie, and it was near the middle, like kind of it was in the second third, where everything came to a screeching halt when David Harbour showed up.
Right.
Decided that he was just going to chew up scenery and like be like, oh, great. Look, it's David Harbour trying to be David Harbour in a bathrobe in India. Great. Go away, yeah. David Harbour.
Yeah, it's funny because it kind of reminded me. And yes, a movie like this, you need those moments to breathe. But I think
you didn't need 15 minutes of it. You didn't need 15 minutes of it, and you didn't need you did not need him turning on Tyler after they had put it up like, oh, this is such a great relationship. They were partners and teammates, and it's like, yeah, he's turning on him. I get it. Like,
yeah, it reminded me. It honestly, with the action movie, it reminded me of the desert scene in Terminator 2. Where, again, you need that break because you just can't go all balls to wall action.
Absolutely,
for the most part. But it was a little too much. Like you said, we didn't need the 15 minutes of it.
There was about 15 minutes of David Harbour in this movie, and it was about 14 and a half minutes too much.
Yeah, I think I would have liked more bonding with Tyler and the kid and Avi than see more screen time of David Harbour.
Well. And especially because his current partner, Nick, the Indian woman,
badass.
One, she is chef's kiss. But
and
two,
she's a
badass, which chef's kiss. But like, I would have loved to have seen more of her than what we got.
Oh,
and
yes.
And, you know, again, like David Harbour's got some sort of deal with Netflix to be in lots of Netflix stuff, I imagine, because, you know, Stranger Things is going to come to an end sooner rather than later. And they seem to like him. I don't know. People seem to like him. I'm not in that camp. But yeah, I'm going to say it one more time. There was too much David Harbour in this movie.
Agree. I absolutely agree with that.
I don't know. I wonder what other people think about that, if they think I'm crazy. But also, I'm not the biggest Stranger Things fan either, so.
I like Stranger Things well enough, but it wasn't on my top list of shows from last year.
It's never been on my top list in the 3 years it's been out. I enjoyed season 3 for what it was, but I also like the stuff they do with the kids more than the adults. And this season
absolutely.
We got much more of the kids because, you know, they were able to work longer on set.
kind of like when Transformers is better where they talk when they focus on Transformers instead of the human characters.
I don't know, man. Sam Witwicky is a goddamn gem.
Yeah. Just I could use a lot less Sam Witwicky and more Optimus Prime.
I'm kidding. Yeah, but he got to go to Optimus Prime heaven.
Oh geez.
So just saying. It happened.
I took a moment of silence for that one.
Yeah, I get it. Okay. So this movie is definitely far from perfect. So let's break this down. So Sam Hargrave is the director. It was produced by both Russos, Anthony and Joe. Chris Hemsworth was also a producer. And then a couple other guys. The screenplay was by Joe Russo. And the story was by Andre Park, Joe Russo, and Anthony Russo, based on a comic called See You Dad by Andre Park and Joe Russo, with art by Fernando Leon Gonzalez. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting. The music is Henry Jackman and Alex Belcher. I thought the music, the score, the underlying score was really, really helpful. Cause at no point did it ever like overpower what you're looking at, but it definitely helped,
right.
Especially in that big frenetic run, drive, hide, shoot, fight, scene at the beginning of the movie. It did a really good job, like, building that tension, and definitely had, like, I looked down at my watch and, like, my heart rate was definitely elevated, and the music definitely had something to do with that, not just the, I mean, to go along with what we were looking at.
Agree. And also the, can you explain real quick before we move on what you were talking about, a review talking about the white savior?
Oh yeah. I'll get to that. So real quick. So the other thing, this is a Netflix original. It's 117 minutes long. I told you this movie was too long. It should not be anywhere near 2 hours. 90 minutes would have been more than enough. You could have cut out all the David Harbour stuff. You could have cut out some of the Farhad stuff, probably. You probably even could have, well, no, you couldn't have cut that. I was going to say you could have cut out that beginning scene, but that kind of like told you everything you needed to know about Tyler.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, budget $65 million. Dude, Netflix can turn out $65 million of movies like this for the next 10 years, and I will be perfectly happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
I mean, because for the longest time, it was the only thing good on Netflix original-wise with the TV series, and now the movies have been like really stepping it up. There's this one.
Yeah.
There's The Babysitter. There is Always Be My Maybe. You know, there's a lot of these movies that are just getting like they're doing much, much better with them. And yeah, they're definitely starting to be much more enjoyable. It's not just Adam Sandler and his friends making stupid ripoff movies.
100% agree.
So, okay. So yeah, let's talk about this. There was more than one comment about this being a white savior type film, and I don't understand that. Like, yes, there are white savior movies and TV shows and whatnot out there. We talked a little bit of, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, we were talking about Iron Fist the other day. You know, Iron Fist is definitely a white savior story, and for good reason. It's the way it's set up, because the white guy is the fish out of water who just so happens to be able to save everybody.
Right.
This was a military guy that was hired to just come get a kid out. He wasn't saving a race of people from extinction. He wasn't saving, you know, the people from the warlord the next town over.
He was saving one damn kid.
He went to save some stupid kid who didn't listen and got his buddy
stuck
got
out of the house.
Yeah.
And it's people like that which put, you know, race or identity and all this stuff into every single thing that makes me kind of get on Dolores' side.
Right. Are you coming around to my side about the robots are right?
It's really tough not to, when people say stupid shit like that, it's really tough not to say, okay, you know what, Dolores, sign me up.
Yeah. I mean, this comes from Scott Mendelson, who writes for Forbes, who is, you know, kind of a D-bag. Like, he does stuff like this all the time. I don't know. I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand where it's coming from. I think if you're looking at this as like a white savior coming in to save things, that's not what it is. That's not what it is at all.
No.
I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
So
people are dumb.
Yeah, Peter Travers from Rolling Stone gave it 2 out of 5 stars. He said, aiming for fight poetry of John Wick, Extraction comes closer to a series of stunts strung together to look like an ultra-violent video game, think Manhunt 2, in which avatars are played by actual humans. I get that. I kind of understand that. At the same time, I think a 2 out of 5 is a little low. I might give it one more star. You know, I don't like to do out of five. I like to do out of 10. I would definitely give this like a 7 out of 10.
Absolutely.
You
know, because
this is
one of those
B.
Yeah. Cause this is one of those movies that, you know, I can get with the technical and break down the story, or I can just say, what did it make me feel? Did I enjoy it?
Yeah.
Because we've talked about this before. There are plenty of movies that if I'm grading it from an objective standpoint or bad movies that I absolutely love.
Right.
But I you're right. Out of five just is, there's not enough for me to rate something out of five necessarily, especially something like this.
Mm-hmm. And I can say, like, I like some bad movies. just plain and simple. I there's just movies out there that I like that are bad movies. Hudson Hawk is one of the worst movies of all time, and I love it. So just putting that out there. Yeah, all right. So the last thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to the world on the West Side. The movie had a very cliffhangery ending. What did you think of it?
Yeah. You know, well, first of all, I don't think I cheered any louder than when Nick showed off her sniper skills.
Right.
That was, I was like, hell yeah. And I don't know. Like,
so we get a flash forward to 8 months later, right? And we got Avi swimming in a pool, just being a kid. Like, you know, he seems to have come through this pretty good considering, you know, he probably shit his pants 5 or 7 times during the whole thing.
Hope you had your shitting pants on.
Yeah. So somebody wore his brown pants. and yeah, so then we kind of get a blurry view of you know, the horizon, and there is someone who could be Tyler.
But I'd like that they didn't. We're not sure. I like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. This was good. So Hargrave said, if people on one hand feel like the story is complete and is a story of redemption through sacrifice, then for them, it'll be where the kid's imagining Tyler standing there. And then now you go, yes, I'm satisfied. If you feel like you love Tyler Rake and you love Chris Hemsworth and you want a sequel, you're like, there's no way you can't kill them. Then that's Tyler Rake standing there looking at you. We kind of purposely did not pull focus of the character standing there. So, I mean, like it says here, like this is great at the end of the Esquire article. It says, which is linked in the show notes. It says, so from the sounds of it, Rake is dead until Netflix decides Extraction needs a sequel.
I like that. I like the thinking behind that.
I know that's kind of a snarky sentence at the end of the article, in the interview, but it's true, and like it deserves to have that level of snark to it. But yeah, if he's alive, he's alive. Awesome. If he's dead, again, like it was, like Hargrave says, it's a very satisfying conclusion, and not everything needs a sequel.
No, not necessarily, but I would like to see more of Hargraves and see what he can do with in action films. Absolutely. And to your point of earlier about keep wanting to say Chris Evans because it's so much easier than Hemsworth, but I want to see more of Chris Hemsworth outside of Thor, as even though I love him as Thor. Yeah. I want to see him in more movies like this because he draws you to the screen.
Yeah. Did you ever see Rush? The Ron Howard one with
Hemsworth
and Baron Zemo. That's a really good one. He's really good in that. He has a bit part in the vacation, whatever.
Yeah, I remember that part.
With Ed Helms. He's really funny in that. I think Hemsworth, he's a goddamn star.
From what I heard, he's the best part of the Ghostbusters remake.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't.
Yeah.
So my problem with the Ghostbusters remake, I've talked about this a lot, is not the fact that it's all women. It's the fact that it was shot in Boston and they said it was New York. Whereas, like, I'm sorry, but, like, shoot it in Boston. It's a spinoff, right? Like, they tried to pretend like Ghostbusters never happened.
Which is stupid.
Shoot it in Boston. It's a spinoff. Have Revolutionary War ghosts, because around the time it came out, like, Hamilton was the biggest thing ever. You know, really kind of play into that like Revolutionary War, like Boston founding of the country type thing. And, you know, Paul Feig can tell his social justice thing about how America's bad, all that he wants. But no, so I put Chris, like you keep wanting to say him, Evans. And like, I always think Hemsworth, because to me, he's like of the Chris's, it's him.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah, it goes
Hemsworth, and then Andy Dwyer,
Pratt,
Chris Pratt. Thank you. It goes him, Pratt, Evans, Pine, in that order. So,
what was the last one?
Chris Pine.
Oh,
whereas like Chris Pine is Pine is pretty fantastic as well. And when I'm ranking like the four big Chris's in Hollywood, it's like one through like 1A, 1B, 1C. So let's not like
you know the man crush I have on the man crush I have on Captain America. I would actually put Pine ahead of
Yeah. I don't know, man. Evans has made
in a couple other Evans' stuff, and
he's made
I do
some
like
good
it.
Stuff. Did you ever see the movie called Gifted that he did with Octavia Spencer?
Oh, he was excellent in that. Yes, he was.
Okay, one, he was super excellent in that, and two, he needs to do more movies with Octavia Spencer because they had some freaking awesome, like, just on screen like chemistry as actors, like not like oh they're gonna sleep together or anything, but like legit chemistry of like just
yeah.
Two people honing their craft off of each other and being awesome. Yeah. And
I
Octavia
really
Spencer
like
is
movie.
Great too. So I want to watch, what is that? Ma, whatever the one, I think it's on HBO now where she's the lady who lets the high school kids come over and party.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, it is on HBO.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So yeah, I think 7 out of 10, is a good score. Like I could be convinced to say like a 6.5 out of 10, but I'm going to bump it up a half a point just because of enjoyment factor.
Right. I'd firmly have it as a 7 and maybe add a quarter of a point to that.
A quarter of a point?
All,
come on.
Yeah, I'm getting all fractional.
You can do a half a point. Like, let's not make
all
me
right, I'll do half. I could do a half. Like, it's between that 7 and 7.5 for me because it's just so damn fun.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So, awesome. All right. So, moving on, we are nearing the end of Westworld, and we're going to really have to like think about what we're going to talk about next after next week.
Right.
But so this episode is past pawn. If I could learn how to talk today. And I love the tagline for this week, cause they've been doing the little taglines every week, and it says a real friend is one who walks in when the rest of the world walks out. And holy shit, is Dolores a real friend? Because the world walked out on Caleb, and he had no idea the world walked out on him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't know. There's something about Dolores I'm still not trusting. But I love the title of this. And based on, and again, when I first saw the title, I'm thinking this has to have something to do with chess.
Well, I've been saying for the last few weeks, she's been playing chess while everybody else has been playing checkers. Okay. So I am going to jump right to the end of this episode because we'll talk about everything else. She sets off an EMP when they are in the room with Solomon. All right. And the EMP, like there's been a lot of people talking about how like she set the EMP to turn off Solomon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. She said why the EMP was in there when they walked into the room. She hit that button to free Solomon. So now we are getting Solomon versus Rehoboam. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Sweet. Anyway, we're going to get Sirach versus his brother in, you know, computer simulation battle of what the future of the human race is going to be for the rest of the series. And I am so excited. Go robots.
Yeah. There's a couple things about that end with Solomon's talking to Caleb where he tells him, well, first of all, he says he can't protect him or something along those lines about against the variant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, before she hits the button, he says, I must warn you.
Right.
And of course, that's right when it goes off. Yep. So my question is the variant he's talking about Maeve or is it Charlotte?
No, the variant is William.
Is it?
Think about it. But let's circle back to the beginning of the episode as we've kind of like gone this. We're going to do this Westworld style. We're going to go way out of order. The opening of this episode was amazing. It was amazing because you have Musashi sitting there smoking a cigarette, drinking with his boys, and he gets a phone call, and it is a reconstituted Charloris or Hail Loris, however you want to call her. And she's like, hey, what's up? I told some people where you are. fuck off. And, you know, they get up to walk out, and who do we get to see first? Clem.
Clementine.
Clem. I love Clem.
My darling. So. Clem is Buffy. Clementine. Use her whole name.
Clementine. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I forgot about Clem from Buffy. Yeah. Clementine Pennyfeather, who is, one, looking like a badass. So happy to see her back. And, you know, she goes right into killer robot mode. Just, you know.
Which is always nice.
Always nice to see. Musashi gets kind of past her. Or I guess it would be Mulorus. Let's call it. We'll go with that. Lorsashi?
Yeah, I'm just going with Musashi or Sato.
How about Dorsashi?
Or Musado.
Musado, okay. But anyway, they drop out the suitcase machine gun, which I'm always a fan of.
I always love those.
But how is it this version of Dolores shoots like a stormtrooper and can't hit shit? I think Musashi could not have hit water if he was under it.
So I do have, we can go over these later. I have a few plot convenience points, and like some of the shooting in this episode.
Yeah.
Was absolutely under there.
Yeah.
Under the purview of plot conveniences.
Right. Or was it the force working in mysterious ways? Like, that's why stormtroopers, have you ever heard that theory? That's why stormtroopers are so bad at shooting, is the force is keeping them from hitting their target.
That's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. But okay.
Anyway. So
that's kind of funny though.
Yeah, it is funny. So Musashi gets past Clem and he thinks he's getting away. And how do you say it?
Hanairu. It's more like Hanairu.
Okay,
I'm just saying the Hanairu. And
let's say Japanese.
Rip on me for the bad pronunciation.
Let's say Japanese armistice.
Yes.
Sticks him like a pig, and then walks in a circle. So cool. Yeah. So cool. So not only did they split him in half, but then they cut his head off.
Right.
Right. So they want that like sweet Dolores memory ball. So they can load it up into the war world simulation and find out what the hell it's thinking.
And yeah, and it makes sense that they brought this version in, and well, because the whole, like, just there's a poetic justice to it that, because like she says to him, she says something along the lines of, you know, you're an abomination to his memory or something along those lines.
Yeah. He was a good man, and you're messing with his memory essentially.
Yeah. So that's, there's some poetic justice to that. We actually don't need to talk about her much because she's in it just for that scene. But Charlotte, I am really interested to see where she's going. And that's the reason why I wondered if she was the variant in the sense of mucking everything up, because I don't think she has a side. Like, again, she just, you know, turned on her, quote unquote, I guess, you know, in a way, her sister.
So
brother,
I'm gonna call it self. I'm gonna tell you why I think she's not the variant, because when Solomon was talking to Dolores, it knew what she was, but it had no record of her. It couldn't, like, she wasn't accounted for as a variant. And that may be because Solomon went into mothballs before Delos spun up, you know, the hosts and everything. But I don't think the hosts are taken into account for
Serac's
future,
yeah.
Right? For the future he's done, which is why he needed the Delos information, and now why he's trying to shut down the host, because there's something he can't control.
But aren't all the variant or is that what they're called? No, they're using a different word with Rehoboam when they're showing that in the very beginning of every episode where it shows the say variant. Though,
it's like disruption or. Whatever. Yeah, but yeah,
it's something else. Okay, it says variants.
Yeah,
I think
it does say variant, like variants detected. But no, that's a person. So those are people, and like, you know how like it's been like mostly just the corona of a virus. No, I'm kidding. A corona of an eclipse is the little black part around the white ball. And now we're seeing that black part has gotten much, much bigger because of, you know, Dolores letting the cat out of the bag. This was a really interesting episode, right? Like the whole passed pawn thing. I feel like Serac is the one who thought he was getting his pawn to the edge of the board to replace a power piece. And to me, the passed pawn is Dolores letting Solomon out of his cage.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though. I don't know if it's that Solomon out of the cage or it's that Caleb finally has made a decision to, because he was close to walking away.
Yeah.
After learning everything, which, again, if you learn that everything that you thought was your life the last 15 years was a lie.
Well, I thought kind of I thought he was going to walk out because he felt so bad for killing Veronica Mars' dad.
No. Yeah. That's funny.
Enrico Catalano. But, yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, it's so he made that decision to, I guess, stick with the plan.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what this new plan that Solomon put together is about?
Well, it got compiled and then, you know, the lights went out. But then we get the preview where it's kind of like, are you ready to play a game, Caleb? Caleb, would you like to play a game? Yes, let's play thermonuclear war.
But I understood that reference.
Thanks, Cap. did you understand that one? Anyway, I think with Caleb, right, is once everything was explained to him and he kind of he recohered, if that's a word, recoherence. Because, you know, he was in a state of decoherence because of the treatment as, you know, one of these divergents in the system. And he's one in 10 the treatment worked on. 1 in 10. And yet they thought this was still a good idea to do. I'm sorry, but Serac is going to get everything he deserves. I want to know why they're keeping all these people on ice.
Right.
Because essentially to me, it's a ready-made army against whatever the establishment is.
I think, you know what I think it is, and this is, you know, putting myself in the mind of Serac, is that, you know, he doesn't want to be looked at as someone who just kills. He's civilized, quote unquote. So his way of thinking is that you put these people on ice and maybe in the future we'll have a way to actually make it more like 8 of 10 or 9 of 10, or maybe even 10 of 10, 10 out of 10 people get this treatment and it works for them. That's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I didn't kill them. So, you know, I'm not a monster.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you're saying he's civilized after he bashed Liam Dempsey Sr.'s head into the
Well, just because you're civilized doesn't mean, yeah, just because you're civilized doesn't mean you don't, you know, get down with violence every now and then.
He gets down with the sickness, if you will. yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm just being facetious. I think the bits in between the action in this episode really told us a lot, right? Told us a lot of where Westworld is going to go as a series. You know, again, this is going kind of against the model of the HBO show, where the penultimate episode is typically, you know, the big bang for the season. And where that is not the case. Like, we are going to get right up into the last second of this show, we're going to be on the edge of our seats for this season. And where it goes in season 4 is going to be highly dictated by what happens with Caleb, with Dolores, with Maeve over the next 60 to 80 minutes, however long the finale is.
Yeah. And, you know, hot take maybe, but the way this is going to be, if I'm being, at least the way they framed, and again, next week, or this week actually, this week might change this idea, or what I'm about to say now, but the way I would almost rather have Charlotte be the main attraction next season, based on it seems like Dolores's story is naturally coming to a conclusion from what we've seen so far. And again, like I said, Sunday's finale might change that, but it seems like Dolores has gotten to the point where it's, you know, time right off into the sunset, for lack of a better term.
See, I think what I would like to see is Caleb step up to be the field general and Dolores as his, you know, consigliere or, you know, second in command, right hand, kind of guiding him based on what she as a computer that can, you know, look at humanity and judge what it's doing in a fraction of a second, to help him make decisions. And then he either follows those recommendations or not. I think that would be really interesting. I definitely want to see him start waking people up from the cryo sleep and be like, hey, this big Rambaldi ball has been trying to live our lives for us.
Yeah.
Let's get some pitchforks. Let's get some torches and let's go bang that door down.
But you know, what's funny, and this is where I hope they continue. And again, you don't need to stretch this out, but this reminded me a bit of Total Recall, the original. And I blocked out the remake if there was one.
If you call that remake something else, it's a good movie, just plain and simple.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually is. Yeah. In the sense of where you find out that, and it, this, and think about this symmetry here. Last episode, William realized that he was quote unquote the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb finds out in this episode that he's actually was the bad guy.
Yeah.
And again, not going forward, but he was the bad guy over the last years, rounding up these people that, you know, that they disappeared,
yeah.
Whether it be, you know. So I love that symmetry where, you know, at the end of last week, William's like, I know, I'm the good guy. And then Caleb finds out that, shit, I'm the one that, you know, the scum that Dolores has been talking about for all these years.
I done messed up. So, yeah, I mean, like with him and Francis, you know, becoming mercenaries, if they were mercenaries, like, you know, that all could have been an AR that was just put into his head at the treatment facility. But when, you know, Enrico Catalano was like, you know, don't you think it's funny you had the same job that you had in the military? And then Rico tries to get Francis to kill Caleb and vice versa, and then Caleb is quicker on the draw. You know, it's really interesting. Like, what the question is, what is real? What is reality right now?
And that's what I actually have right here. It's like, what is real?
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, again, that Black Mirror episode, because this reminded me again of that. It was called Men Against Fire. It's episode 5 of season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's so good. It's one of those things where it's funny because the guy's in the military and they're fighting this enemy. And things happen where he realizes it's not what it seems.
Right.
Think about Transformers more than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And that, especially this, you know, this reveal, as you saw, I was about to say William, when you saw Caleb's, all these, it's like the veil was slowly getting pulled away.
Right.
Or the layers of, you know, the layers of, whatever you of that therapy were slowly getting pulled away, and he was actually seeing the truth. But again, you make a good point. Is that the full truth, or right. Is that again something else that they made up to, you know, focus his, you know, outlier mind on, you know, whatever they want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I think as we're looking at the quote unquote end game for the season and moving on, like, the series started with humans coming into Westworld. Season 2 ended with hosts coming into the real world. I think season 3 is going to be the story of humans and hosts together fighting against, you know, the tyrannical computer that is trying to tell them how to live their lives. Life is messy. life is a series of ignoring your base instinct. And it's funny how quickly people went back to that base instinct in the last episode and how it has still continued throughout. So yeah, it's really right. Quite interesting. I do want to talk about Dolores and Caleb storming this facility. And the Barrett sniper rifle that she had with the targeting drone.
Right.
That was freaking awesome.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those that I still am not sure about the actual setup of it, but it, like the mechanics of it were pretty freaking amazing. Like, because he was like, "That's too far,"
right?
And she pulled out the drone part of it, and I do like how she used that against Maeve mm-hmm. in their fight,
right? So with the first part with Caleb and Dolores, when they're going through and killing everybody, and then they get in the facility, and the other guy runs out, and you know. Caleb looks at her and goes, "I told you,
a Call of Duty hip fire."
Right, but Caleb looks at her and goes, "I told you there were seven," and you know, it was kind of like that whole, like that's what showed me he was actually really in the military at some point because that instinct right. kicked back in. Then we get Maeve and Dolores having a really cool telepathic conversation. You know, Dolores finally got into Wi-Fi range, and the battle in the Jurassic Park kitchen was really cool with the sword versus whatever Dolores could get her hands on. Did you watch the post credit scene? Not yes. post credit scene, but the post credit, like little docu short.
Right. Yeah.
No idea. Evan Rachel Wood is a black belt in Taekwondo, but watching her move and kind of going back and thinking about like everything I've seen her in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I get it. Like that makes a lot of sense the way she carries.
Well,
herself.
after I heard that, because yeah, that was one of those things. Like she moves how she move. I won't say like a dancer, but well, sort of in that regard. Martial arts in a way it's yeah. dancing.
She moves like a fighter.
Yeah, but I actually really watched that because I thought about that like before, like just how well she moved in their fight scenes, and then when I heard that, it made sense. Yeah, it made a lot of sense. And again, I can't remember the other things I've seen her in. I'm just focusing on Westworld yeah. and you know, this season, and I thought that makes sense why she moves like that.
Yeah,
especially because Taekwondo is more, it's more about being on you know that springiness kind of mm-hmm. like traditional karate. Right. So that you know get cutting angles again. Cutting angles is vital for any you know fighting mm-hmm. activity. But you know Taekwondo because that you know that bladed stance and everything mm-hmm. and. That made a lot of sense, like seeing, knowing that, and then, you know, watching it with that knowledge in mind. I was like, oh, that makes sense on that move right there. Or
yeah.
Yeah, how she pivoted here.
So, but I loved how Maeve flew in on the helidrone there and got out with her sword and like armor looking like a freaking badass ninja. And that whole fight, right? And the first second that they walked outside in that her drone opened fired on Dolores. And it was like, oh, they're going to have to like be out of line of sight of this drone for Dolores to get anything happening. And it was a sword versus a knife. Maeve kept throwing her out from underneath that shelter that they were fighting under. There was a ton of just really cool, like stakes that were happening. Yeah. And I really wish they hadn't shown that scene of Dolores missing the arm, in the preview
yeah.
for the previous week.
Yeah.
Cause I was waiting for Maeve to cut it off, like straight up Anakin Skywalker style, or Luke.
That's
Skywalker
what I thought.
Style.
Yeah.
Like I thought she was losing a hand that way through from the sword. I will say when it got blown off, that was freaking awesome.
Yeah, that was and I like how they showed how they did all of yeah. that and how they choreographed the entire, not just the fight, but you know, the cinematography mm-hmm. and how they set up the shots, lined up the shots and everything. And yeah,
again,
that
what a great little bit of acting she did to make it, cuz like, you know, you've got your arm and it was blown off just above the elbow. And in the way you move that bottom part of your arm, like really depends on where, you know, the bicep part of your arm goes. And she did a great job just kind of keeping it out where it's like, there's no reason for it to move in. That I feel like that was just very authentic for what your arm would do in that sort of instance.
Yeah. And it was straight up to me, reminded me so much of Civil War, how when Bucky like gets his arm blown off and he looks at it like, oh, and it's like, even though she's a robot or, you know, even though she's a host, you know, the shock of that, you know, just in shock, just like what, like it's, I don't even know if she, I think they feel pain, but I don't know if their pain sensors are turned off, but just that shock of losing a limb.
Daryl,
that
pain,
was
pain is a program. Pain is a program.
That's true.
We learned that many, many times over the last 3 years. Pain is a program. Yeah. it was really cool. I loved that. I loved how she was able to set her Barrett up and have her little mini drone targeting the bigger drone. And it was a really well done series of events that, I'm going to liken it to like a, NFL game, right? A lot of people say it's a bunch of commercials that are broken up by football. This was a drone on drone gun battle that was broken up by two karate robots. And it was, I'm sorry, but that just to me is like, if that was a drone on drone gun battle broken up by karate robots, I'm watching that every time, no matter what. And like, I'm going to love it. Like just the hands down.
And one of the things I will say, I've had issues with Evan Rachel Wood over, and again, it's not necessarily her, but more of her character over the last few episodes, is she hasn't real, but it makes sense. I understand that. Because she is a general, but she's had really a subdued amount of emotion, especially when you compare it to her other hosts that are out there.
Right.
However, I love the scene, like you were saying, in the Jurassic Park kitchen, where she could not understand why Maeve was going against her.
Right.
And there was just this, like, look of rage, like, you are fighting against, we're like almost the last of our kind, and you're fighting against,
I mean, she
that.
Says that. She says that verbatim. Like, we're the last of our kind, and you're fighting for our extinction.
And the look on her face, it was just such, you know, such a good job of acting, and just because she's been calm and cool, again, like a general needs to be. Don't get me wrong. I don't think she, you know, needs to have that, you know, emotional ups and downs, but that I just love that scene because that was like one of the things I've had. If I say I have issues with her, the last couple episodes of that. But that was great.
So
that
I feel like I'm going to have that conversation with some meatbag at some point when our robot overlords take over, about like, you know, why are you fighting for the robots? And it's like, because you guys suck. But all right. So the last part of this episode is we get to touch back in with Bernard and Stubbs. And fucking William. I think that's the only
William
way you can
finds
say.
Out that Stubbs is a host.
Yeah, and he's like, are you kidding? Like, and doesn't he call him a toaster or something? Like,
he calls him a toaster.
Yeah. I liked that little bit there. But so William last week came to the realization that he's the good guy, right?
Yep.
In Decoherence. William is the good guy in his own mind. Not for one second do I believe William is here to save the world.
No, absolutely not.
He turned over anonymous data to Ciroc for a butt ton of money for capital for the park, right? This is not a man who cares about humanity or really cares about much of anything outside of the game.
Now, to be fair, that's like the sin, the original sin he's trying to make up for. But I still don't think he is there. And again, I think I said it last week. He's a hero in his own mind.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but trying to kill Stubbs and Bernard, like, okay, great, kill them. They really, like, what has Bernard done this season other than walk around being confused? And
looking at screen and iPad screens.
Right, and just over the edge of his glasses. And Stubbs is... You know, okay. I'm not really sure what Luke Hemsworth's purpose has been other than to keep Luke Hemsworth on the show because, you know, he's a fine actor.
That was one of my plot conveniences. They just let him walk off and, you know, don't don't care, don't keep an eye, I don't think he's going to run off, or are you serious? So that was another one of the
Just let him walk into the convenience store, which is a place known to have guns. So yeah, it was really, really kind of interesting.
So real quick, I know you mentioned like how you said the end game.
Yeah.
And so I look, I did a little, I don't play chess, so this is going to be a very layman's term. So if chess players out there, I know you know the full definition of what passed pawn is. It's where like the board is removed of all other pawns. So one pawn has basically, if, you know, they don't have to worry about the other pawns, and it's really a big strategy during the end game because there's no direct obstacles in its way.
Right.
And you can stop it. The other team or the other.
Okay. So you're saying they can stop what?
They could stop, you know, for the pawn that is in the pass pawn, the other player can stop it. However, it can waste valuable time and resources, which again, that's where I think what Dolores has done is trying to remove the board of other pawns that could get in the way of Caleb. I don't know if she's, you know, totally done it because, you know, there is still Clementine and Hanaru still out there.
Right.
So
and the third host that Maeve was building we're assuming is Hector. And Dolores still has another memory ball that has not come into play.
So there's still two of those out. So, that was easy to forget that.
Yeah. So the whole thing, like, if you can get a pawn to the other side of the board, right? The person you've been playing against has probably not been paying very close attention to what you're doing. The other thing is the minute that happens, so that pawn gets by. So I think for the example that you're going with here, to me, Caleb is the pawn. And Caleb now has gotten past Serac. And there is now a very powerful piece put back on the board, Solomon, behind enemy lines. Because a lot of times what has happened is you will have if you have a passed pawn and there are other pawns on the board, there's not a lot they can do to stop you because you're behind them now. And you're coming at, you know, the knights and the rooks and the king and the queen from a point of strength, and you have an advantage because, you know, part of chess is moving from one side to the other. And you know, acquiring pieces as you go. The strategy for guarding your flank is something that's completely different and isn't always quite so obvious when you're playing chess. So I think, and my thought is the sacrifice that Dolores made, that version of Dolores, was to free Solomon. And to to have that queen level powerhouse on the board against Serac's queen level powerhouse and Rehoboam.
So my question, and this is, I know you mentioned that she used the EMP to free Solomon.
Right. I mean, that's what it sounded like. I might be wrong. I don't know.
And this is the thing, because like the way the EMP, and again, we didn't get anything as far as a visual of the EMP itself, like we did in, you know, for example, Civil War, which, and again, it's not necessarily we need that from a practical standpoint, just from a viewership standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you see her and Maeve go out.
Yeah.
So the pulse hit. So my question is, how does Solomon get out from that?
So it was like Solomon was being trapped in there, right?
It was like almost like a
Faraday cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like he's inside the Faraday cage. So like his signal can't get out, and that turns off
that
the Faraday
sense.
Cage.
Yeah.
Because I think I don't for a second believe that version of Maeve and that version of Dolores are gone at this point. Turn back on. Everything will cycle back up. The other thing that we're forgetting is there's a whole bunch of frozen men and women, you know, back there.
Yes.
And so like that is going to cycle off. And is that going to start waking up Caleb's army?
Or is that going to kill? I mean, I don't think it's going to kill him. Although I would assume that the default is if power goes out or something, it automatically opens.
Yeah,
or starts right. defrost process. Yeah. Sounds like we're talking about chickens or something. It starts that process of decryoing them.
The decryoing. I like that. That's a good band name, the decryoing. Decrying.
Severe tire damage.
Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to what's happening. I don't think they like really gave too much away, other than Caleb talking to Solomon, through communication device. But yeah, I'm so stoked to see what happens and what the new direction of this show is going to be. We may be done with hosts. We may very well be done with hosts after this episode. On Sunday.
I don't know if I would. I don't know how I feel about that. And again, this is just like me off the cuff, because that's a really good point. I'm not quite sure how I'd feel about this show. And again, one of the things I do like, don't get me wrong, is how this show in a way reinvents itself mm-hmm. every season. That's actually one of the, but while at the same time, keeping the overall tenets of what it means, and you know, that through line,
right?
So that's actually that's one thing I'll have to think about, like in the sense of, because it's a possibility. It's right. It's a, because there's not that many hosts out there. There's what, 3-4?
I mean, there's
maybe six
that we know. I mean, of that least. If you got to count Stubbs and Bernard, and,
yeah.
So Maeve has her 4. Dolores has 3 left, 2 left. So yeah, I mean, less than 10.
Yeah. And we know, we have no idea. And again, to your point, if Solomon was able to get out,
right.
Which from a, now, if now this was what I would say, if you're correct about the host, or for most of the hosts, it being a hostless season next year, it would make sense to have some type of major adversary, or I don't know if he would be an adversary in Solomon, although they did say Solomon has, it's not quite all there because of all the scenarios he's written and all that stuff. So he might be a bit glitchy.
Right.
So having him, if we don't have hosts, I guess my thing is, I'm not sure about if I want to show this show, particular show, I should say, being about the humans just fighting against a rock.
Right.
So, and again, we'll have a better idea on Sunday where this all leads, or, you know, I have a better idea of my theories and
right.
You're kind of like what I would like to see. But, and that's what one of the things I like about this episode, and to your point, it doesn't give too much. It gives you a lot of information, primarily, you know, that background on Caleb, but also it's pointing us, strictly in that finale direction where most of the pieces, we got the pieces and we know most of their, I would say we know their motivations for most of them. We still don't know what Charlotte's motivations are. What is she, you know, because again, she just said, Usado, goodbye.
Yeah,
so
Masashi, yeah, she's like, goodbye, you're dead now.
So is she gonna hunt down Dolores, or I don't know. I love how they kept her, play on words in a sense, you know, she was in the dark, you know, from a visual standpoint, and her motivations are still very much in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Very, very, very interesting. So, I don't know, man. I think that's a good place to leave it. Actually, real quick. So numbers were up this week. 813 people watching the initial broadcast. I wonder if that counts for HBO Now, because I always watch it, you know, live for the most part. Like maybe 10 or 15 minutes off, but. Yeah. This one had a 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think people are going to look back at this episode and be like, no, this was really good. This set up where we were going. And,
I will say it this. It makes more sense. I know that's an easy kind of, you know, place to check out what, you know, things are rating. I never look at Rotten Tomatoes.
Well,
anymore.
I mean, it's just, it's a known aggregator. So,
right,
and here's
right.
the thing,
yeah.
is Rotten Tomatoes doesn't set those scores. I mean, this is just based off of 16 reviews that you know, the average
well,
score.
Well, this is the other thing. This is the problem yeah. I have with Rotten Tomatoes real quick. I've seen multiple times where somebody will give something a 3 out of 5. Say 10 people will give something a 3 out of 5.
Right.
Five of those will be certified fresh, and 5 of those mm-hmm. will be rotten.
Right.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. It's all about the sentiment of the article and like, whatever. But yeah, no, I think but
it's good that the ratings are up. I like that. I'm glad for that.
Yeah. I mean, more people are watching. And so, I mean, it's coming back for a fourth season. So I think we are, we're good to go, but
yeah.
All right.
I think Crisis Theory is next week. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So, but yeah, cool. All right. Any last words?
Nope. I just can't wait for next week.
Nope.
Or
yeah.
For Sunday, actually.
So happy Sunday when you're listening to this. Tomorrow is May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you. Make sure to
Monday.
Check out the series finale of. Yeah, but
Brian,
this comes out on. Yeah. What?
Monday. Oh, yeah. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're saying tomorrow.
No, I'm dude, we're tomorrow. In the future. We're talking in the future right now. Catch up. Anyway, so on Monday, the 4th. Tomorrow, the Clone Wars series finale happens, and there is the first episode of a Mandalorian season 1 documentary
yes.
about the making
yes.
of, which will be 8 episodes long, and The Rise of Skywalker hits Disney Plus. So, and don't forget to check out Hasbro Pulse for
pre-orders. I will be on there.
And you know, well, like Daryl, you're listening to this right now. Tomorrow there will be pre-orders as well for Fan Friday. Anyway, yeah, so thank you guys for listening. Daryl is going to get caught up on the last 4 episodes of the Clone Wars because he doesn't have to have seen any more of it that we could possibly talk about next week because it is fucking badass.
I have heard that. So,
dude, it takes place during episode 3. Just saying. You know.
All 4 episodes?
All 4 episodes take place during episode 3.
Nice.
Yeah. So, anywho. All right. On that note, we will talk to you guys next week. Talk to you later.
Peace out.
Bye. The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, with new episodes out every Sunday. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Infamous Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying the show, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/infamouspodcast for our new tiers and rewards. The Infamous Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Brian Tudor, with music provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. You can find me on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Brian Tudor. So, whenever you're listening to the show, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Later.